You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 145, Joseph, King of Dreams. Dang it, wrong musical. This episode was brought to you by the patrons. That's right. To find out more about how you can get your favorite movie nominated, head on over to rotoscopers.com/Patreon. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, and everything in between. I'm your host, Morgan Stradling, and I'm here with my lovely co-host on the big comfy chair, Woo-hoo. Chelsea Robson.
I feel so like a queening over here.
Oh, yeah.
My throne.
We've moved from the couch to a giant plush chair, and I'm sitting in a little just table chair, but that's okay. That's okay. You know, she is my guest, and she gets all... All the things in life, right?
All the things in life. I like it.
For those of you who are new to this show, the Animation Addicts Podcast is a show all about the wide, amazing, beautiful, magical world of animation. We review animated films past and present. And this time, we are going to be reviewing a direct-to-video sequel by DreamWorks called Joseph, King of Dreams. So this is actually a patron pick by Holly. So we are.
Thanks, Holly.
Thank you, Holly. We are very excited to do this movie. We're going to have a lot of fun. And I think we should preface by why this episode is coming out late. If you are listening to this live, or not live, no one's joining us live right now, but relatively near when we release this, if you're listening in the archives, you're like, don't care. But we recorded this at my house a few days ago, and something crazy happened with the recording that we ended up sounding like chipmunks with a little flutter every few seconds. So
it would have been impossible for me to edit that out, and I was like, no.
Like, if it was just the chipmunk voice, I think we could have pitched it down enough.
Or even just left it and laughed at it.
Yeah, it could have been that episode, right? Like, it would have been great. And when Chelsea first said that, I was like, that's cool, that's fine. But when she said the flutter, I didn't quite understand what she meant by that, so I went and listened to the recording, and it was every few seconds, and it was not possible to fix. So here we are on a Saturday morning, re-recording.
Saturday morning cartoons, this is how we do it.
True, true, true.
All right, so we're going to start off by jumping right into the trailer. Let's see what they have for us.
Ah, let's play the old music, so bring everyone in.
The Prince of Egypt comes the next in a series of classic stories.
Or so they wanted. Right. Didn't actually turn out that way.
DreamWorks Home Entertainment invites you on an all-new animated adventure.
I am the movie trailer voice guy.
Yeah, he's got such a great voice.
Storytelling at its best. A story that will live forever.
Tell Pharaoh about my gift, please.
I'm told you merely need to hear a dream. You can explain it.
That is true.
That is true.
That is true. Very like, this sucks.
It is my curse.
My favorite song in the whole movie, Chelsea doesn't think it's memorable, but I like it.
The classic story of one
I would totally sing that in church, if I sang. And it modulates.
It does.
My favorite.
Supply. Joseph, King of Dreams.
The film.
Own the film the entire family can enjoy.
From whatever Knight Ritter is. Again, so I was talking about this in our original review, but a lot of the quotes that they pull for these movie trailers are epic and amazing. Best movie of the year. Usually they get those from pretty decent sources such as Siskel and Ebert, the Chicago Sun-Times, LA Times, New York Times, the big publications.
Right.
When they have to go to Family Fun Magazine and some of these publications you've never heard, obviously that means the big guys did not enjoy it or did not even review it.
They probably didn't even go.
And so they had to trickle down. So if you ever see Rotoscopers on a theatrical movie trailer,
you know
that they stooped really low and no one else...
to go to us.
Yes, no one else liked... I mean, we're pretty hot stuff. We know that.
We
However,
are.
We are not the LA Times and some of these big publications. So that either is one of two things. No one else liked it, right? And so they had to bubble down to us. We were the only people who liked it. So boom, here we go. Or no one else reviewed it. Right. And we were the only people.
Which we have gone to some of those reviews. Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Very, very good time. So a trip down memory lane. So talking about that, let's go into a little of the history of this film, because this film was, like it says, a series of classic stories.
Right.
This wasn't, I would not call two things a series. There was Prince of Egypt and King of Dreams. Two does not a series make, in my opinion. And it's because this film really didn't do, I guess, what they thought it would do in the home video market.
Which, and Disney at the time was just like, pull them out.
Yeah.
They were still high and mighty in the home direct-to-video release.
Yeah, and so, of course, I'm sure DreamWorks thought, hey, why not? Let's do it.
Well, I mean, Katzenberg was like, I've already been doing that for the last 10 years.
Yeah, exactly. I know this market very well.
Right.
Another thing that this is a very popular segment, demographic, these Bible videos, specifically mm-hmm. the animated Bible videos for kids. There is a company called Nest Entertainment, which is run by Richard Rich. He does the Living Scriptures. And Richard Rich, you may know as the director of This One Princess, Alpha and Omega, whatnot. And he really tapped into that market. And
he did a good job.
I grew up watching those Living Scriptures videos and loved them a lot. So it makes sense that, okay, DreamWorks, hey, first off, the Living Scripture videos are not even Joseph King of Dreams quality.
No.
So if DreamWorks could have come out with a series that were higher quality than the Living Scriptures, I mean, it would have been a home run. However, obviously, the costs were too high and it didn't do well enough in sales to merit that. It would have been really cool. I would have loved to seen other Bible stories. You know, Samson would have been a cool one. Heck, Adam and Eve. That's a great intro story. There's a lot of Jesus stories that you can tell. The Bible's full of stories, and unfortunately, didn't work out that way.
Well, instead, they went ahead and purchased VeggieTales.
Yes.
So it was just like, hey, we already know that these guys have the corner on this market. And they're
new up and coming guys.
Yeah. I would honestly say that they have a bigger.
Oh, for sure. More people know VeggieTales than they do Living Scriptures.
Oh, yeah. But that's just the videos that we grew up on. They were they came out before VeggieTales ever did.
Yes. Yeah. Early 90s.
Yeah. So Morgan and I have a deep love for this.
If you've ever listened to the podcast and you hear us refer to, oh, you know he's a bad guy because he has a big nose, that comes from these Living Scripture videos where the bad guy in the story always just had this, like, giant schnoz.
The giant schnoz. It was fantastic. And they always had a weaselly voice, too.
Unless they're a big buff one, that's
Oh, that's true, yeah.
So there's two types of villains, really. I mean, really, we never change.
Oh, it's good times.
So going into a little bit more tidbits about this, this is pulled from Box Office Mojo, IMDb, and of course Wikipedia. And so the studio is DreamWorks Animation. The directors were Rob DeLuca and Robert C. Ramirez. Executive producers, Penny Finkelman Cox, Steve Hittner, and Jeffrey Katzenberg. And it was released on November 7th, 2000. So this is actually the sequel that's a prequel.
Yes. I like prequels.
This tells the story of how the Israelites, the children of Israel, made it into Egypt.
In the first place.
Yeah, and ultimately led to them needing to leave Egypt and be freed. So if you're wondering, like, what happened here, I mean, this really explains. And it's crazy because it starts with not necessarily a super small family. There's 12 brothers.
Right.
And, you know, they're all married and have their families. but for the most part, I mean, less than 100 people, more or less, maybe.
Right.
Turns into thousands upon thousands.
They come in as refugees, and then they leave as refugees. True. They just can't find a place.
Well, and then they wander around for 40 years. So
they're, yes.
So jumping right in, it's the same art style and character designs as Prince of Egypt. They really wanted to create that this is in the same family. I think if they were to continue with more of these, they all would have had this similar art style to connect them.
Cinematic universe?
Yes.
Should we say?
Oh, the what, Prince of Egypt cinematic universe? The Bible cinematic universe? There we go. I like the character design. The animation isn't as refined as in the original, which is expected, but it's not bad enough to be distracting.
Not at all.
They also have some very nice special effects, particularly that dream sequence that we see very early on with the Van Gogh Starry Night, you know, those short brush strokes. So I think they did a really good job. This wasn't just a, all right, just ship it away. Let's just put a couple million or two into producing this and then off we go. I do think there was a lot of thought and effort that went into it. And I think the result is a good film.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
I'm making keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
And I do think the reason is because the story of Joseph is a great story from the Bible.
Oh, yeah.
It has a lot of different facets, and it's not just one of these stories that's just a few verses and off you go. You're done.
Right.
It's a few chapters, and so we really get to know the players in this story a little more so than we would perhaps in other Bible stories.
And they do a really good job of giving them a personality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can actually picture Joseph. I mean, not all of them get personalities.
No.
But
that's too much.
Too much. There's 12. But, you know, the major ones, you kind of feel like you know the story. Mm-hmm. And, like, I would feel that same way as the brothers.
Yeah.
If my sibling came and was like, hey, you're all going to bow down to me. Okay. Little brother.
Well, we jump into a song, which basically sets up the premise of this and the strife between the two brothers, the older brothers and Joseph, the miracle child.
Yes.
I mean, when he is being very self-referential and referring him to himself as the miracle child, I imagine how could have got a little ticked and not have liked the guy. We hear the line where he says, a bright shining star where there was none. The father saying that. And really? Thanks, Dad. Thanks a lot.
I am handsome. I am smart. I am a walking work of art. Wait, that's the wrong one, right?
Oh, yes.
No, dang it. That was one problem. I kept, every time I would go through this, I would expect to hear Andrew Lloyd Webber's Technical Dreamcoat series in there. I'm like, where's that song?
Part of me wishes they just would have used those, but then again, you got to pay a lot of moolah for those. Other than the one song, which I do enjoy, Chelsea not so much, but it's like they felt they needed to be a musical. I felt like in this time in animation, because of the success of Disney and the Disney Renaissance and how everything was a musical and like animation had to be synonymous with, you know, animate with musical,
right,
that they felt they needed to do it too, especially since Prince of Egypt was.
Yeah.
But I feel they could have just, okay, yes, Prince of Egypt was a musical, had those songs, but maybe you could have just had one song in here.
Yeah.
The big one. You said, I am special. I am... Is that what he says in the...
In Andrew Lloyd Webber's.
Well, he says it here. Oh, there's another line. He says, I am special. I am smart. I am set apart. Rules, exceptions don't apply. Really, Joseph? Really. I mean, we need some humble pie right now. Because this is... No wonder this...
Right.
I mean... That's horrible to say. Like, no wonder you ended up being thrown into pit and sold into slavery. Like, no, that's under any circumstance, that's not where my mind leads to. But let's key it back a little bit. Okay.
Let's come back. And really, if you're, that is something that is more inferred in from somebody's interpretation of the Bible story than necessarily told.
Yes. Like, we don't get the impression that Joseph himself was this high, haughty, arrogant.
Right.
It, like, as I call him, based on this version. The world's first millennial. I'm special. I'm smart. Cater to me. I don't want to work.
Yes. No, and I say that. I think our generation, because we are millennials, mm-hmm. we're on the upper side of it. But it's still like, I still think that our generation is not entirely that way. But yes, there are strands.
Yes. There's a subset that we just shake our head and say, why? Why? And of course, that subset has to define the whole generation, right. Which is very unfortunate.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Oh, man. You know, it starts out and you see Judah. And really, they only pull out a couple key characters.
Mm-hmm.
And Judah's one of the main ones because up until Joseph was born, he was the birthright. So that's, he was like, hey, Dad, were you this stressed out when I was born? And Dad's like, well, it was different with your mother. This was different. And I was just like, what the?
Well, go into that, Chelsea, because growing up, we went to the same church. We were in the same church class. With other youth, and Chelsea would always just pull out, we'd be studying different scriptures, and she would just pull out these stories, and she could give you a Bible story from, like, all the teeny little characters. She knew all the players, she knew all the brothers' names. We were just blown away. We were, like, 11 or 12 at this point. I'm like, how do you know this? And so I dubbed her Scriptorian number one, because she was good a Scriptorian, and I wanted to be like Chelsea, so I dubbed myself. Of course. I dubbed me. Scriptorian number two, because I was her apprentice and I wanted to become like Chelsea.
Those were good times.
Yes,
man.
Those were very good times. So
this was also during the times when our teachers didn't want to actually teach. They would just put in the living scriptures.
Yes, exactly. They're like, you guys are too rowdy and out of control. So boop.
And we didn't even realize it until much later. Why did we go through so many teachers? In a short period of time, we went through like 10 teachers.
I still don't think we were that bad.
I don't think we were either.
But I'm sure we were. I'm sure we were just giggling, laughing like right now and not paying attention. So
we were always engaged in something.
Yeah.
Okay. And I don't want to say that I'm like the scriptorian, because there's definitely a lot that I do not know. But I'll give you, like, the basics of the story.
All right.
Okay, so Jacob is Joseph's dad. And Jacob was like, hey, this girl out there, her name is Rachel. I really want to marry her. She's awesome. And so he goes over to Rachel's dad and says, hey, I want to marry Rachel. And his dad's like, well, okay, but you have to work 7 years for me. And so he does. He works for 7 years, and they end up in the wedding. The dad of Rachel pulls a switcheroo, and instead of marrying Rachel, he ends up marrying Rachel's older sister, Leah, because he's like, I can't get rid of Leah until, like, she's apparently not the looker. So he ends up marrying Leah at first, and then Jacob's like, ah, dang it, I really wanted Rachel. And so he's like, well, you can have Rachel, but you have to work another 7 years. So he ended up having to work 14 years to be able to marry Rachel. So he had a long-term vision there. He was dedicated. This whole time, Leah is like, hey, we're going to have kids. It's going to be great. But at first, like, she maybe couldn't. I think she couldn't at first. And so she was like, well, here, take my handmaiden and have kids with her. And this is
a different time, my friends.
This is Genesis, okay? This is the beginning. So he has some kids through one of the handmaidens, and she finally gets pregnant. And so she has kids, and her oldest son was Judah. And so at the point in time, Judah was going to be the birthright of that time. But this whole time, Rachel's like, hey, I'm here too. Rachel couldn't have kids at first, so she gives her handmaiden to have kids for her. And so you got Gad and Asher out of those. But then finally, toward the very end of her life, and what is said in the miracle child.
She was, what, 90 at this point?
Yeah, I don't know how old, but she was definitely not in a normal age of having kids. And so she had the miracle child of Joseph, who was, because she was the preferred wife, he was now the birthright. And so all of this happened over, like, many, many years. So I would say Judah is probably about 20 years older than Joseph, something like that. I don't have the exact dates in front of me, but, you know, there's a wide gap in the kids here. That's why in the beginning you got Judah being like, well, what am I, chopped liver? That's what's so funny is, like, at that point it also makes me think, because like Rachel was able to have one more and have Benjamin. So it's like, okay, if Joseph was the miracle child, shouldn't Benjamin be like the double miracle child, like, again?
Yeah, but Joseph was the one who primed the pump. Like, once you prime the pump, it's easy to get water again.
There you go.
That's another that's a reference to, you know, when you have an old pump and it's dried out, sometimes you have to pour a little water into it to get everything working again. And
right, there's a little piece of leather inside the pump. Mm-hmm. And so if it gets dried out, once you put water in it, it'll expand and it'll actually create the suction.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, once you prime the pump, it's easy to get more water after that point.
Right.
So that's Joseph, he primed the pump, which allowed Benjamin, who, yes, you may have been Miracle Child 2.0, but, I mean, Joseph was the true miracle.
The true miracle.
And so, as a result, they give him this coat of many colors.
Which, I mean, styling.
I did not love the design of the coat here. I felt that it didn't work for me. The colors were sort of contradictory and not a very good way, not very flattering. I didn't like the design.
The bird on the back was interesting.
Yes.
I was wondering what they wanted to,
well,
what the symbolism
we saw that
the hawk.
We saw it at the beginning and at the end.
Right.
But it wasn't clear, like, what does this mean?
Yeah.
I guess you have to be super scriptorian to understand the meaning of that.
I do not know what the meaning of the hawk is. I'm sorry, people. I have disappointed you. I did appreciate, like, it was kind of like essence of Dombluth Dazzle.
The trim of the coat, right?
Yeah.
The little gold shimmer.
I was like, this is totally something that would be in a Dombluth film.
Yes, again, just another reason for the brothers to not be so fond of,
right,
of Joseph.
Yeah. Well, and then, so, actually, I didn't mind that song. It was...
Even though I can't remember. I mean,
I can't
it was
remember
a good,
it at all.
It was a song that I enjoyed the lyrics, but I can't remember.
Yeah, I couldn't.
The tune.
I can't tell.
Yeah.
No idea how it went. But
insert song here.
But I am happy, I'm smart.
Dig it.
The next thing you go into, he's it establishes him also as a dreamer.
Mm-hmm.
God is opening up the vision and giving him the direction in life. Be ready, you're gonna do some great things, which on the one hand is, I think, everyone should look for their, I'm going to do great things in life. God will show me what I need to do. But in this case, you know, his was going to be higher than his brother's.
Mm-hmm.
So it does show his dreams. I liked the dream sequences we were talking about before.
Yeah, and it was a way to differentiate the real life from the dream, and just had a different feel. And I really thought taking inspiration from those paintings was a nice touch.
Yeah.
You know, and yet here is yet another... case number 345 of not making friends and influencing people very well with your brothers by, hey, guess what I dream? Well, actually, he doesn't really want to tell them. And he's kind of like, so what would you dream? Tell us. And well, tell us. Well, I was above you and ruling over
kind of
you.
Kind of all bowed up before me.
Yeah. Thanks, brother. Thanks again. You know, and I think they do a really good job of establishing that through these various things, you know, and these in the Bible did happen. He was beloved by the Father because he was the miracle child. Mm-hmm. He had the special coat and he had these dreams that put him above the brothers as well. Just thing after thing after thing make the brothers very resentful.
Yeah.
And so because of this dream, they wake up early and Dad says, well, since you're already up, you might as well go tend to the flocks and get out of here. But no, not you, Joseph. You need to study. And so the brothers are grumbling away. They go away. And he says, well, I want to go with the brothers. This is very much like his Luke Skywalker moment. Like,
I want to get some power converters.
Yeah. Exactly. That's totally what I thought. And so he's like, okay. And he lets him go. And... you know, and then the brother's like, oh, it's Joseph. And they're not happy that he's there. And, you know, yawn, I'm so tired. And then, you know, again, Joseph, you're not tired because you got up early. You're tired because you were up all night.
Ooh.
I mean, little snitchy, snitchy brother.
Right.
Again, not winning friends.
Not doing your greatest.
And I'm definitely getting very much, not only Luke Skywalker vibes, but Hercules vibes. Where yeah. Hercules, he was something special. You know, we know who Hercules is. And he's here amongst these humans and mortals and doesn't fit in. Right. And very similar. I mean, and this is part of, you know, some of that hero's journey.
Yeah.
But you know, here Joseph is, and he's amongst family and still doesn't quite fit in. And
yeah.
He even says, like, why don't I fit in here? I mean, Hercules even says that.
But. Right. Well, and it's just so weird to think, though, that, like, Judah and his older brothers are, like, 40 here. And so, obviously, the fact that their dad is, giving preference to the 15-year-old, you know, it's like, what about me? Like, I have way more experience. I'm better off leading this family. So, I understand
that. Did you explain how Judah ended up being...
Well... Yeah, because Judah, yeah,
you
is,
said it.
Is the...
I can't remember if you said it or
is
not.
Is the birthright, yeah. Oh, good.
Yes, and we mentioned this whole story, right? But we only ever see Joseph's mother here. And so we only see her, and so there's, like, I guess they didn't want to get into that whole backstory that Chelsea talked about. They only ever refer to him as half-brother.
Right.
Which I guess you can assume, okay, there's another mother somewhere in the picture. But they did not want to show both mothers at all.
And handmaidens.
No.
It's like,
So, but the, by just saying, yeah, I think they kind of think, oh, half-brother, maybe the other mother's not gone, or maybe the other mother's gone.
Yeah.
But that is not the case. We know better.
Yes, no.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And there's sisters there, too. You just don't
totally,
see
totally, exactly. I mean, you can't... odds are 50-50 on right. whether you're going to get a boy or a girl. And the odds are not in your favor to have 12 boys in a row, you know, over the course of who knows. I mean, it can happen, but it's not in your favor.
No.
Like I was saying, I can't imagine being sold into slavery by my siblings. That is completely incomprehensible to me.
Yeah.
And the fact that this happened, it's just pretty astounding how resentful these brothers were that it came to this point.
Yeah.
That we have to dispose of him.
Right.
Which is such a shame. And like we said, the movie does a really great job of setting the stage mm-hmm. of how he gets there. So they throw him in the pit and, you know, they were going to like leave him there to die or like feed him to the wolves more or less. But then they kind of have a change of heart and decide to sell him.
Yeah, Judah's like, let's get some money out of this.
Of course.
Well, and that's what's interesting. This is a really interesting part, Morgan, is that they sold him for 20 pieces of silver, which was exactly the amount of money that Judas sold Jesus to the Romans for 20 pieces of silver. Do you know what that means?
Tell me.
No inflation. I mean, that is pretty impressive. I guess that's what happens when you are dealing solely with gold and silver as opposed to paper money that doesn't even go to the gold standard anymore. So there you go.
Mm-hmm. So he is sold into slavery and he has to walk behind the camel, which this was funny to me. The slavers only had one camel. So one guy got to sit on the camel. Joseph was pulled behind and the other two just had to walk who knows how far to Egypt.
Sucks to be you.
Yeah, if I were them, I would use some of that money to invest in some camels, because that is a long trek.
That is a long trek, for sure. So, and then they finally get into there, and one of my favorite lines, I don't know why, I honestly don't know why this was, it caught me as, like, funny, but they're just like, where's the slave market? And it's like, down by the docks! And I'm like, where else would it be?
Of course.
It's always going to be down by the docks. Oh, man. And then you see, you get this moment... where they've like destroyed his clothes, they've shaven it off his hair, and he runs his hands through his hair, and he's like, oh, inside you can just see him saying, my locks, mm-hmm. my beautiful locks. And then this is when Potiphar comes and buys him in. And he does a great job at Potiphar's home.
Yes. Yes, he does. Yeah, so Potiphar comes. We're introduced to him. He buys him. I highly doubt that Potiphar himself would have come to buy the slave. But, of course, because he's this intellectual who's been studying, he's a scholar, he is not as big and burly and buff as the other slaves or potential slaves. And so he gets picked. And it turns out that, oh, you can read. You can write. Who taught you? My father. Well, your father did a great job. So they establish that.
And they establish a connection there, mm-hmm. which
he say, and he saves him some money when he's being sold a horse. Oh, the most beautiful horse I've ever seen.
Right.
And the guy has weighted the scales a bit so that way he can get a little extra money. Oh, master.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you need to take a look at this.
Hello.
Yeah. So they show him as being not only, I mean, very loyal to his new master. Obviously, he's not happy about his situation.
Right.
But he's dealing with it in the best way that he can. So he's not resentful and he's not trying to lose his master money. He really is loyal to him and is looking out for him. And I think that's a good trait to have. I mean, we're going to see in this movie that this story is a story about when undesirable consequences come, having a good attitude and doing the best you can with it.
Yeah.
Because, yes, this is the worst thing that could have happened. Being sold into slavery is no joke and is very, very sad and unfortunate. But he did the best that he could. And yes, it was hard for a long time. This wasn't just a year or two. This was decades, as we see. From the very beginning to the end. And where he ends up is in so much better place. Because it allows his family to be saved and
right.
whatnot. So we'll get into that as we go on.
Yeah. Well, and then Potiphar's wife also, you know, they do a really good job of accentuating her swagger. She's like, well, hello, Joseph.
Well, I love that one of those scenes where she comes up to him is, has he just been given free reign to paint a mural of his family?
Like, that's what I was thinking. Like, who? What?
It's like, who's that? Well, that's my mom. Like, this is my land where I came from.
This is my land.
This is my house. Excuse me. Why are you painting your life story? You should be painting my life story.
Right.
Maybe it was like, here's your free wall. Do what you want with it.
Oh, man. Yeah. And then she comes over. But the thing is, like, she comes over and she's just like, oh, tell me more. It's a great pickup line, girl. And like, he knows right away. Uh-oh.
Yeah. Well, and this is where she tries to seduce him,
mm-hmm.
And wants her in the biblical sense to lie with him. And he has nothing to do with it. And so he runs away. She gets very upset and rips his clothes as he's running away. And it puts him in a very precarious situation. However, he still stands his ground. And like, one of the lessons you can learn from this is when you're put in a situation like that, you don't have to give in. Even, you know, it was his master's wife. So in theory, I guess he had to do what she says. But he didn't.
He could have felt like he had to.
Yeah, exactly. Like, okay, yeah, legally, this is what I need to do or whatever. But right. he morally did not feel that that was right. And so he ran. And so that's a good situation. When you're put in situations that you don't agree with or just make you uncomfortable, you can run and you can get out of there.
Yeah.
And absolutely do it. Who cares what your friends think? Who cares if they're going to make fun of you? I mean, do what's going to be better for you in the long run and just run and get out of there.
Yeah.
So.
And obviously he's initially not...
It doesn't work out for him.
It doesn't work out for him. Initially, it's kind of, he puts him in an even worse spot, but eventually it puts him in the absolute best spot.
Yeah. Yeah. And Potiphar does mention later on, like, I know what happened there. And
which I think was more of an artistic representation.
For sure. That was to kind of mend that fence between Potiphar and him.
Uh-huh.
Because Potiphar, we're gonna skip over the scene and then we're gonna go back. But after he's in jail, Potiphar takes him to Pharaoh.
He gives like his word of like his stamp of approval.
Yes,
on him,
yeah.
Which also is not mentioned in the Bible story, but it also gives some validity. So you can like, okay, I can see that.
And we already established a lot of time into these characters and character design, and we paid the guy. Right. So
why not give him a couple extra lines?
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, he's thrown in jail. At this point, Potiphar is not happy with the situation because she's sitting there bawling. Look what he did to me. And so he gets thrown in jail. And again, things are not turning up for Joseph. I mean, at least being a slave who in a very rich household where he wasn't working manual labor, I mean, other than having to hold that slave, you know, hold that palm leaf over her head.
It is sunny.
He was in a pretty good situation as far as slaves, you know, on the scale of being a slave. And now he's in even a worse situation.
Yes, he's in the dungeons. And honestly, okay, Ben Affleck is the one who is the voice actor for Joseph. Mm-hmm. And I'll be honest, at the very beginning through this whole thing, I never realized, like, there was never a point where I felt like, that's Ben Affleck, mm-hmm. until this point.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't feel like I ever noticed that it was him. You could not give me Ben Affleck's voice with just him doing an interview, and I'm not that familiar with him, I guess.
Yeah, I wouldn't have, I did look.
Oh, you mean at this point you looked it up? Right. I didn't realize it was him.
But it was just like, there was this, like, I know who this is.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I can now hear you mm-hmm. and your general intonations and things like that. I'm like, okay, now I can see it's Ben Affleck. But it was just like, interesting. But yeah, so he's in jail. And this is the point where Morgan's favorite song comes in. And probably the best song.
You know better than I do. Show me the way. I don't even think that's the...
No. But...
Okay. See, again, I mean, my favorite song, the quote, most memorable, unquote. Still, I can't even remember.
I like the whole time I'm really wanting him to start singing, close every door to me, take those I love from me. And I'm just like,
sing it.
Yeah. Dang it, wrong musical. But then you get this like tree section. Even in this darkest pit, he is making something good of mm-hmm, it, and mm-hmm. he's improving his situation.
Yeah.
He has a tree now.
Yep. That's the literal representation of like him internally and kind of his outlook on life. And I really did like that. I think mm-hmm. that was one of the highlight scenes of the film for me.
And I honestly, when you go through really difficult times, and I mean, you should know, I mean, we've already mentioned that Morgan and I, we went to the same church. We're both very Christian, and we both believe in Jesus Christ, and we both... that's just our background, and whatever your background is, if you believe in God, then you know that these moments of really difficult trial, you're only going to get over them by being humble. I mean, in my life, it's definitely been that way, where I've gone through difficult times, and I feel like the lowest I get have actually been the best for me internally, just because I have, you know, gone to the humble side and actually gone to Jesus Christ and actually looked toward my Savior and seeked help from him instead of resentment toward the world.
Mm-hmm. Same for me. So we go back and the dreams that Joseph have are reintroduced. We see them three different times in the film. One that sets the stage, this one that helps him out of a bind. And so he's able to interpret these dreams. And he's also in jail with the butcher, the baker, and the... Oh, no.
No candlestick maker there.
The baker.
And the butler.
And the butler.
You shall buttle as you did before. Dang it, wrong musical.
So they have different dreams that are plaguing them, and they need them interpreted. He says, hey, I can interpret dreams. So he interprets the butler's dream first, and his actually turns out to be very positive interpretation.
Hey, I like this.
Yeah. And
tell me more.
Yeah, so he goes out and do that and does that. But so who gets taken away first?
They both get taken away around the same time.
Oh, okay.
Like, because in the story, they were both going to be either released and gone back to their duties or killed on the third day.
Okay, gotcha.
So the two different dreams were, you know, you had the butler, and his dream was that I was on the hill and I saw the grapes and I squozed them into a drink and I gave them to Pharaoh. There were three vines and I took them all and gave them to Pharaoh. And then, so the interpretation with that was, okay, in 3 days, you're going to be freed and you're going to go back to Buttle as you did before. Once again, great line. And then the next one was the baker. And he had three baskets of bread, and at one point in time he was carrying all three, but then they all fall and then crows come in and devour them all and he's left with nothing. And so he's at this point, Joseph's like, yeah, I don't know what your mean. He's like, you're lying, tell me. And so he's like, okay, this is what, in 3 days, yours is not the dream I would like to do, but hey, in 3 days, you're going to be taken out of prison and murdered and killed for whatever crimes that you are supposedly guilty of. And so, sucks to be you.
So yeah, and that ends up happening. Obviously, the baker.
No, the baker was the one that died. Butler.
The baker doesn't live to tell the tale, but the butler does, because later on we hear that Potiphar.
Tell Pharaoh about me. Tell Pharaoh.
Yes, Pharaoh is the one who's been plagued by some dreams. So like we said, this is where the butler tells Potiphar. Potiphar tells Pharaoh. Pharaoh says, bring him in. Yeah. And so he does.
And so Potiphar comes in, grabs him, takes him to Pharaoh. And I hear you can interpret dreams just by hearing them. Yes. And so there's so many names here. So at this point in time, you have Pharaoh, and Pharaoh tells his dream. So it's two dreams. One is where he's, I was walking along on the banks of, dang it.
If you have not watched Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat,
it's so good.
It's so good. I believe it's on Netflix, or it was on Netflix, or just like go rent it. We'll include a link in the show notes so you can just rent it for what, like $2.99. It's definitely worth
your
time.
It'll make your day.
Yeah,
it'll...
it's a Broadway musical, but they have a recording.
Yeah,
it's quite good. So, and the music.
So Pharaoh, he sees a cow, and there are seven cows, and they're nice and plump, and then seven like really scrawny and dying cows come over. They eat the big cows, but they are left still scrawny. And he's like, okay, so that's dream number one. But there's another. Dream number two, I'm walking down and there are seven ears of corn, and they're bright and beautiful, and then right behind them come and devour them, the scrawny and sickly corn, and it's bad news. So basically the same thing. And so he's like, okay, this is what is going on. You are going to have 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine. So now all you got to do is find a man to lead you through all this. I would suggest taking every fifth of this and this and this.
Yeah.
And like he's just like throwing in his like 2 cents. Well, yeah, this is what you're going to do. But you have to find a man that'll do it for you. And so Pharaoh's just like, you're hired. And it's like, sweet. From zero to hero, no time flat.
Well, what I like about this is that Pharaoh himself is open to what's best for his people.
Yeah.
You know, this is a dream that's been
played. This is a very different Pharaoh.
Yes,
than Ramesses.
Exactly. He's very much more about the people. And, well, I mean, he cares about his people. Ramesses didn't really care about the Israelites because those weren't his people,
right,
per se. But he wants what's best for the people. And so this dream really is plaguing him. And this is the solution to the dream and the interpretation. So he takes it very literally and then goes and does what he says and puts Joseph in charge. So Joseph now is basically number two in command to Pharaoh in Egypt, which is quite climbing the ranks quite a bit from where he was.
Yeah.
Which if you see where he was initially sold into slavery, you can't really imagine a situation how that would have happened. But, you know, he was blessed by God in this.
Well, you look at, had he not been sold into slavery, had he not been thrown into prison, he never would have ended up meeting the butler.
Yes.
And the butler was the one that told Pharaoh. And so you look at, like, there's so many of these crazy things. Honestly, I look at my life, there's so many amazing things that have happened to me that I'm like, wow, in no world would I ever have imagined I would be in this position right now. Mm-hmm. And it was only because I followed some type of little prompting that got me from A to B to C to D, you know?
Yep.
And it was like, I never would have imagined anything like this. And then, but the Lord knows better than I. So,
yes.
Even through those really difficult times, they're leading you. Like, here's one of my favorite phrases. Like, people are like, it'll work out someday. I'm like, no, it's working out right now. Mm-hmm. It's working itself out. Otherwise, without going through these things, you're not going to be prepared for what's coming.
Yeah.
That's what I like about this story. It really does emphasize those things. So, yay.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be this great epic story if things were just, hey, great all along, and didn't have any trial, didn't grow, wasn't able to overcome. You know, he starts in a decent place, he falls to the depths, you know, the classic hero's journey, and he climbs above.
Yeah.
And so, you know, here we come. We have these 7 years of plenty. They're great. They put all the excess grain into these big storehouses that are, like, they're seven giant monoliths that are not monoliths, but basically statues that are created.
Yeah.
They just shove them in there. And then during the years of famine, the people are coming. How many's in your family? Three, sir. And, you know, they divvy out their portions. They divvy it out.
We're trusting.
Yeah, they're being very trusting. Like, yes, okay.
This little kid, like, how do I know that you didn't just come back?
Yeah, exactly. But whatever, that's looking way too far into it. Yeah. But here comes these Canaanites from the land of Canaan, or Israelites as they are known.
Well, let's go back just one step. So in the Bible, it actually says that Pharaoh gives a senna to Joseph.
But she was always around.
Right.
In, you know, during this time. She's, like, very nice to him at the beginning. Right.
And giving him food while he's in prison.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So he can pick his wife. I pick her. She gave me food. She shall give me sons.
Well, they call her Osenna, but we have a friend whose name is...
spelled the same way.
Spelled the same way, but it's pronounced Asenath.
Right.
And it's a very unique name. I've never met anyone named Asenath. And so to me, when I see that, I'm just like, what? Osenna? I mean, but it makes sense. That's definitely a more Egyptian way to say it. But to me, it'll always be Asenath.
I feel like she might have told us that that's how it's supposed to be, but nobody was ever going to...
Oh, really?
Yeah, I feel like she maybe said something like that at some point in time to me, maybe.
Well,
but, yeah, we have a common friend.
Please call me by my proper name. Like, I have a friend at work, and his name's Hussein, but everyone calls him Hussein. Oh. And, which is like, you know, that is a pronunciation of the name. And so in different meetings, people are like, yeah, Hussein said he's going to do this. And I'm just like, it's Hussein. Like, I know it's Hussein. And I feel that he probably has said this a few times, and he refers to himself as Hussein.
Right.
That, like, you just give up after a certain point of time.
Yeah. Well, it's like me and my last name. Like, is it Ropeson or Robson? I don't care. Whatever. Yeah. I don't care.
Okay, so we see that these Canaanites come in, and they're hey, we're going to pay you for this. We are starving. We also are experiencing this famine, so we'll pay you for some of your grain. And this really kind of triggers, to use a very popular term right now, it triggers Joseph.
Yeah.
Because he sees them, he recognizes them. Turns out, hey, they're my brothers, and they've come here. And initially, the Egyptian's like, yeah, sure, you're going to pay. Here you go. But Joseph gets very defensive and almost kind of like wants retribution for them and says, no, you will not do that. And he's like, hey, what are you doing? They were going to pay. You know, and Osenna really is the voice of reason here. She's always trying to, she knows the true Joseph. And this, again, is some artistic liberty with perhaps how he behaved. We did know that in the Bible story that he wanted to test the brothers to see if they truly had changed and had a change of heart. But I feel that we see a bit more angst of Joseph and inner turmoil by seeing them, which I would too. I mean, here's the people who sold you for slavery. They were supposed to be your family.
Yeah.
And, you know, things are, you know, happy and coming along. And
then I also think, going back to the to the musical, where he thinks back on those dreams that he had prior of his brothers coming in and bowing before him and him being the the ruler over them. And, like, so I guess I never it kind of bothered me that he had so much angst in this moment, just because I never had that in my mind. I always felt like he saw those things coming to fruition and being more in awe as opposed to being more anxious, but still wanting to test.
Yeah. So he does test them. He has them go and get Benjamin, because he mentions, oh, this other brother, we have a little brother. And so he wants to go get him. He's like, what? Go back all the way to the land of Canaan.
Aww.
I want to go to get some power converter. Just kidding. And so, okay, fine. They go and they bring Benjamin back. Benjamin's like, what the heck? And he gives them, oh, yay, we had this big party. Here, you each get this big thing of grain. And before you go, I'm sorry, but one of you has stolen from me. And he has basically framed Benjamin to kind of see how these brothers react. So he puts the goblet in Benjamin's sack. They open it up and voila, there it is. It wasn't me, I swear. I didn't do it. I've been framed. And the brothers react different to how they initially behave toward Joseph. They say, no, take me, take me. Like, I can't see my brother. I can't see my father suffer again if we lose Benjamin. Like, this would break him. And that is really enough for Joseph to say, okay, just kidding.
JK.
April Fools.
Well, and the thing is, and I was reading in Wikipedia, it was telling a bit of the story about the production and how it really, the storyline, it was having some issues just because they were going from plot point so quickly and didn't have a lot of connection you didn't feel a lot of connection with anybody. And so they were trying to do the same thing that they did in Prince of Egypt. In Prince of Egypt, they really focused on the relationship between Moses and Rameses as brothers. But then, so they're trying to pull from the page of that book and put it into this one and be like, hey, there's, you know, how would you feel if your brothers came and, you know, they sold you into slavery? And so creating more of a compassion toward and just empathy toward this any situation right here. And I think that's one of the main things that they're trying to get across at this point is just the relationships.
Yeah.
Dang, that'd be hard to, I would be kind of resentful. But then again, it has been about 20 years since that happened and I'm in a better place.
Yes.
So
we basically are wrapping up.
But at this point, one of my favorite parts of this whole section was they just have like one little scene where it like cuts to this little band that they have. And it's like this really big fat guy with these little tiny cymbals, just like this giant smile. Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. I was like, I laughed for a good 3 seconds on that one. This whole movie, worth it just for that moment.
So then he says, hey, and he being Joseph, hey, come live with me, bring family, let's come live in my household. And so we see this little band of this family. There's all the brothers, there's their families, you know, because they've obviously been married and have kids. There's the father, who's overjoyed to see Joseph again. Rachel has passed. But it is quite a little family unit. It's quite a little family reunion. And it's like this cloud of people. And I'm sure Osenna was like, great, in-laws. You know, it's great when they stay for a weekend.
Right. Now they're moving in.
Now they're moving in. And like we said, this sets the stage of how the children of Israel end up in Egypt. And at first it was a very harmonious relationship because Joseph was there and Joseph was number two to Pharaoh and it all worked out. He was a great guy. But then over the next few hundred years, they really do multiply.
They multiply way more.
And they begin to overtake the Egyptians where they say, no, 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 no. You are just going to be our slaves because we can't handle this anymore. And like, free slaves. So for Joseph, in the closing of his story, it really was one of forgiveness. It was one of faith. It was one that, you know, even though the worst thing can happen to you, you can still overcome, have a positive outlook, and things will be better in the end.
Yeah.
I mean, he did not let that be his defining moment, that I was sold into slavery. I was taken away from my family. It was very unfortunate. Like, you want to be with your family. But for him and his journey, and ultimately was best for the family in the grand scheme of things.
And the country of Egypt.
Yeah, they came over. And so that's what I really like about this story, is there's something that I can take away, that when things are really bad, like, this is not the end. You can get out of it and we can be positive. So I liked that a lot. As far as the movie, what would you rate this film?
Okay. So as far as the movie goes, like I said, because I just the entire time I was looking and thinking of other movies, even though it was a great film and I thought they did a great job with it, but I still would give it like 2.5 stars just because I'd rather be watching the Technicolor Dreamcoat or Prince of Egypt. So that's where I put it.
I'm going to give it 3 stars. I really enjoyed this film. I liked that one song. I liked just, and I think the reason this overall I give it 3 stars is because the story itself of Joseph is a very good story. Yeah. It's very compelling. It has a great payoff, great ending. And so I think the source material was pretty well established. They fleshed some things out, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, they had something going good for them at the beginning. Yeah. And so I just really liked it. And it was relatively good. I had never seen this movie before. So
I hadn't either.
You know, and you look, and I love to judge a book guy's cover. Like, for some reason, the cover of this just doesn't really, like, do it justice. No. It just doesn't look that great. You know, you think direct-to-video sequel, definitely I know what's in that genre.
Yeah.
Some things are quite good. King of Thieves. Man, it seems like anything that has a title moniker in it, King of Thieves, Prince of Egypt, King of Dreams, I mean, you know you're in for something good. So I dare one of the listeners to find one of those. Well, I guess there's lots of princess-type films that I'm sure are bad. But anyway, 3 stars.
All right. Now, we want to know what you guys thought about this movie. So head on over to rotoscopers.com/145 and you can give us all of your comments there. We also have all the show notes for this movie and for, you know, if you want to take a look and actually see it. It is on Netflix in the U.S. If you're looking for it on maybe Amazon, we will have those links there, as well as if you're wanting to listen to the music.
Well, no, I was doing this before because we did record this episode before. Okay. This is the second time. This soundtrack is not available on iTunes or Amazon. The only thing that is available is there's this one guy who, as part of his compilation of songs about faith, he covered that one song that I liked better than I. And so that is the only really existence of any sort of soundtrack. So I will include that guy's version. It wasn't David Campbell, who was the singer. And he actually, speaking of Hercules, was the voice of Hercules. But anyway, so yeah, I will include that version because that seems to be the only version that exists. And then I'll also include a link to the YouTube playlist of all these songs.
There you go.
But so you could listen to them. But other than that, it doesn't exist. So, no. All right, guys, that's all we have. Be sure to leave us a comment in the comment section of rotoscopers.com/145 to let us know your thoughts on this movie. Give us a little review. And until next time, we are the Rotoscopers.